leaves over her head, a veil shielding her from the nameless witnesses, the ones who already refused to see her. The silk cord felt so soft at her throat at first, such an elegant way to die. Shiva died this way. The thought that Shiva died like this, surrounded by people who saw nothing, made the tears flow harder. Sherzad gasped, and the cord tightened.
Baba,
she breathed. It cinched tighter, and she couldn't stop her hands from flying to her throat.
Yersa, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me.
As her fingers battled against her pride's directive, the soldier lifted her from the ground by her neck, pulling the cord as he did.
Tarek,
she choked. Her chest was falling in on itself. Silver stars ringed the edges of her vision. The pain in her chest grew. The silver stars were rimmed in black now, and her neck was on fire.
Shiva.
The tears and the pain all but blinding her, she forced open her eyes one more time to a curtain of dark hair, to a waterfall of black ink spilling across the last page of her life.
No, I'm not nothing. I was loved.
Then, from the distant reaches of her mind, she heard a commotion, and the cord was released. She fell to the ground, her body striking the granite hard. Sheer will to live forced air down her throat, despite the burning agony of each breath. And someone grasped her by the shoulders and took her into his arms. As her vision struggled to clear, the only thing she saw were the amber eyes of her enemy, close to her own. Then, with the last dram of strength she possessed, she struck him across the face. Another man's hand seized her forearm, yanking it back so hard she felt something pop. Sherzad screamed, a harsh and anguished cry. For the first time, she heard the caliph raise his voice. It was followed by the sound of a fist against flesh.
Sherzad!
Jalal grabbed her, enveloping her in his embrace. She collapsed against him, her eyes swollen shut by tears, and the burning sensations in her arm and throat almost unbearable.
Jalal,
she gasped.
Delam.
He stroked the hair out of her eyes, comforting her, bringing her back from a place of nothingness. Then he glanced behind him, to the sound of continuing commotion, to a chorus of whimpers and fury.
Stop it, Khalid,
he yelled. It's done. We have to get her inside.
Khalid?
Sherzad murmured. Jalal smiled ruefully. Don't hate him too much, Delam. Sherzad buried her face in Jalal's shirt as he lifted her from the ground. After all, every story has a story. Hours later, Sherzad sat on the edge of her bed with Despina. At her throat was a ring of purple bruises. Her arm had been pushed back into place with a sickening sound that made her cringe in remembrance. Afterward, with Despina's assistance, she'd bathed carefully and changed into comfortable clothes. The entire time, Sherzad had not uttered a single word. Despina lifted an ivory comb to untangle Sherzad's still damp hair.
Please say something.
Sherzad closed her eyes.
I'm sorry I wasn't in my room.
Despina's gaze flicked toward the small door by the entrance, leading to her chamber.
I'm sorry I didn't know. They were coming for you. You have every right not to trust me, but please talk to me.
There's nothing to say.
Obviously there is. You might feel better if you talked about it.
I won't.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do. Sherzad did not want to talk to Despina. She wanted her sister's soothing voice and her father's volume of poetry. She wanted Shiva's bright smile and infectious laugh. She wanted her own bed, and a night when she could sleep without the fear of dawn. And she wanted Tarek. She wanted to fall into his arms and feel the laughter rumble in his chest when she said something very wrong that sounded exactly right. Perhaps it was weakness,
but she needed someone to take the weight off her shoulders for a moment, to ease the burden, as Tarek had done the day her mother died, when he'd found her sitting alone in the rose garden behind her house, crying. That day, he'd held both her hands in his and said nothing, just drawn her pain away with the simple strength of his touch. Tarek could do that again. He would gladly do that for her. Despina was a stranger she couldn't trust in a world that just tried to kill her. I don't want to talk about it, Despina. Despina nodded slowly and dragged the comb through Sherzad's hair. The tension against her neck hurt, but Sherzad said nothing. There was a knock at the door. May I open it? Despina asked. Sherzad raised an indifferent shoulder, and Despina placed the comb in Sherzad's lap before she made her way to the double doors. What can they do to me now? When she looked past the threshold, her heart crashed into her stomach. The Caliph of Khorasan shadowed her doorway. Without a word, Despina exited the room, pulling the doors shut behind her. Sherzad stayed at the edge of the bed, fidgeting with the comb in her lap, staring down her king. As he drew closer, she saw the mark across his face where she'd struck him. It colored his skin a deeper bronze, with a tinge of purple at his jawbone. His eyes were drawn and tired, as though he had not slept in a long while. The knuckles along his right fist were red and raw. He returned her scrutiny, taking in the bruises at her neck, the hollows beneath her eyes, and the wary posture of her spine. How is your arm? His voice was even and characteristically low. It hurts. A great deal. I'm sure it won't kill me. It was a pointed jab, and Sherzad saw it strike a chord, his careful composure falling for an instant. He strode to the foot of the bed and sat beside her. She shifted uncomfortably at his proximity. Sherzad, what do you want? He paused. To make amends for what I've done. Sherzad expelled a caustic breath and looked him in the eye. You will never be able to make amends for what you've done. He studied her. That may be the first truly honest thing you've ever said to me. She laughed bitterly. I told you, you aren't that gifted at reading people. I may have lied once or twice in my day, but I have never lied to you. It was the truth. His chest rose and fell in steady consideration. Then he reached up and brushed aside her hair. With great care, he touched the slender column of her throat. Unnerved by the obvious concern on his face, Sherzad drew back. That hurts too. She pushed his hands away. Flustered, she snatched the comb from her lap so she could finish untangling her hair. And grimaced with pain. Her arm. Do you need help? He asked. No, I do not. He sighed. If I need help, I'll wait for Despina. In any case, I do not need your help. When she moved to stand, he caught her waist and pulled her back against him. Please, Sherzad. He spoke into her still damp hair. Let me make amends. The hammering in her chest grew as he wrapped his other arm around her, holding her close. Don't. There are no excuses for what happened this morning. I want you to... Where were you? Sherzad tried to control the tremor in her voice. Not where I should have been. This morning and last night. His breath fanned on her skin as he bent toward her ear. This morning I was not where I should have been. Last night... I was not where I wanted to be. Sherzad tilted her face upward, and her eyes grew wide at what she saw. His hands tightened at her waist. He lowered his head and pressed his brow to hers, his touch as soft and gentle as a whisper. My mountain of adamant. She felt herself leaning into him, bowing into his caress. He smelled of sandalwood and sunlight. Strange that she'd never noticed before, that in her desire to distance herself from him, she had not detected something so simple and yet so marked as a scent. She inhaled,
letting the clean fragrance clear her thoughts. As he placed his palm against the side of her face, Shahrzad realized something horrifying. She wanted to kiss him. No. It was one thing to return his kiss. She'd been prepared for that. But it was another thing entirely to want his kiss. Another thing entirely to desire his affections. To melt into the arms of Shiva's killer at the first sign of adversity. Weak. She sat up in disgust, destroying the moment in a single action. If you want to make amends, I will think of a way. And it will not involve you touching me. He withdrew his hands. Good. Are there any rules? Does everything have to be a game? He said in the barest shred of a whisper. Are there rules, Saidi? The only rule is that I have to be able to grant your request. You're the Caliph of Khorasan, the King of Kings. Is there a request you cannot grant? His face darkened. I am just a man, Shahrzad. She stood up and faced him. Then be a man who makes amends. You tried to have me killed this morning. Consider yourself lucky I have not tried to return the favor. Yet. He rose to his feet, more than a head taller than Shahrzad. The veil of dispassion had returned, and it deepened the lines, as always. I'm sorry. Pitiful, but a start nevertheless. His tiger eyes softened, almost imperceptibly. He bowed his head, then he made his way to the door. Shahrzad. Yes, Saidi. I'm leaving for Amarda this afternoon. Shahrzad waited. I'll be gone for a week. No one will bother you. Jalal will be in charge of your security. Should you need anything, go to him. She nodded. He stopped himself once more. I meant what I said to General Al-Khoury the day I introduced you. The day he called me his queen. You have a strange way of showing it. He paused. It won't happen again. See that it doesn't. My queen. He bowed again before he left, his fingertips to his brow. Shahrzad closed her eyes tight, falling against the bed as soon as the doors shut behind him. Shiva, what do I do now? A righteous blaze and a restless spirit. The half moon over Ray was a milky color, framed by a thin haze of clouds. Along the border of Reza bin Latif's elegant courtyard, the torches blazed in their sconces, throwing off shadows that danced with abandon against the walls of tan stone. The musky scent of smoke and ambergris hung heavy in the air. I feel human again, Rahim announced as he crossed the courtyard and took a seat at the low table before him. Reza smiled warmly. You look a great deal more rested, Rahim John. I was promised a cloud of perfume, and I was not disappointed, Reza Effendi. Tariq joined them a moment later, sitting across from Rahim in the open-air gallery. Soon platters of food were brought before them, steaming buttery basmati rice with bright orange saffron staining its center, surrounded by lamb in a savory sauce of dates, caramelized onions, and tangy barberries. Skewers of marinated chicken and roasted tomatoes, served alongside chilled yogurt and cucumbers. Fresh herbs and lavash bread, with rounds of goat cheese and sliced red radishes splashing brilliant colors against a polished wood backdrop. The aroma of the food mingled with the fragrance of the tapers, saturating the senses with spices and decadence. This almost makes me forget the last 3 days, Rahim said. Almost. Did you sleep well, Tariq John? Reza asked. As well as can be expected, uncle. Don't sound so frustrated, Rahim grumbled. You've barely rested a moment since receiving Shazi's letter. Do you think you're invincible? That you live off nothing but fresh dew and cold fury? Tariq glared at his friend before grabbing a skewer of chicken. He's right. I know you are eager to discuss our plans, but it's important to take care of yourself first. Reza glanced over his shoulder.
Thank you. Please leave us. He directed his servants. Once they were gone, he served himself a portion of basmati rice and lamb stew.
While you were resting this afternoon, I made a few inquiries. Reza began in a low voice. First, I will sell everything I have here. We will need money and mobility. Following this, we will need the support of others with money and mobility. Am I correct in assuming your father does not share our point of view?
My father will not want to be a part of this, Tariq replied with resignation. It is likely he will forswear all involvement if put to question.
Reza nodded, seemingly unfazed.
Then this presents us with our next problem. If your father does not wish to be linked to this endeavor, you cannot brandish your family's name about freely without risking their lives and possibly the lives of Sherzad's family as well. The same goes for you, Rahim. The al-Din Walad name is an old one, and your elder brothers will not take kindly to you jeopardizing their families. You must conceal your identities.
Tariq considered this.
You're right, uncle.
I am of the same mind, but how are we to garner support if no one knows who we are? Rahim interjected. What will inspire them to follow?
Leave that to me, Reza continued. I was one of the foremost merchants of Ray for decades, and I understand the notion of a commodity. Something is rare and desirable when it is made to seem so.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean, uncle, Tariq said.
The light from the torches blazed in Reza's eyes.
I will make you what they want to see. You need only be what you already are. Strong young men and gifted warriors.
Tariq's forehead creased, his gaze uncertain.
But that still doesn't explain how we intend to persuade others to follow a leaderless cause.
It will not be leaderless. You will be its leader, Tariq Jan. You will give this cause a voice. The lack of a voice is the reason the riots in the city streets are quelled time and again.
Your voice must be one that resonates, that demands we see what truly lies at the heart of our kingdom. A boy king who does not deserve to rule Khorasan. A boy king who must be destroyed at all cost.
Rahim pounded his palm against the table in approval.
So we mean to organize a force and storm the city?
That is my greatest hope. But is such a feat even possible? Tariq asked.
Reza took a sip of wine. It will work if we build on our beliefs and make them a reality. Your hope will be our tinder, and my righteousness our blaze.
Tariq looked to his uncle once more.
Where do we begin?
Reza pushed his plate aside.
Return home. I need time to clear my affairs in Ray and determine who might be willing to assist with our cause. The Emir of Karaj will likely provide some form of aid. His wife's cousin suffered the same fate as Shiva a few weeks ago. Once I am in the position to do so, I will send for you.
What about Shazi? I won't leave Ray until...
The Caliph left for the city of Amarda this afternoon. He does not...
Traces of hidden rage settled around Reza's mouth.
He does not murder his brides, unless he's in Ray. Presumably, to witness the spectacle. She will be safe for at least a week.
Tariq paused for a beat before nodding.
Then, after we collect Irsa and Jahandar Effendi, Rahim and I will return home and await your missive.
Jahandar and Irsa? Did you not know? They left Ray the night of the wedding. No one has seen or heard from them since.
Gone? But where could they...
I assumed they were going to you, Tariq Jan. Did you not receive a letter from them?
Shazi's letter. Did she not make mention of her family in it? Rahim asked.
I don't know. I never finished reading it.
Of course not, Rahim harumphed.
Reza gazed thoughtfully at his nephew.
In the future, you must be more deliberate in your actions. Take time before making decisions. It will be of great benefit to you.
Tariq inhaled through his nose.
Yes, I'll do better, uncle.
You've always done better, Tariq Jan, which is why I know we will succeed, Thank you. We're taking on such a task so willingly. I am the one who should be grateful to both of you. It has been a long time since I've felt hope spark within me. The three men rose from the table and moved farther into the courtyard, where Zoraya remained perched on her makeshift muse, patiently awaiting Tarik. He donned his Mancala cuff and whistled for her. She soared to his outstretched arm, reveling in his attention. Then, with a flick of his right hand, Tarik directed Zoraya into the sky so she could hunt. She shrieked once, her cry filling the courtyard, before she ascended into the hazy darkness. The shadow of her body in flight drew across Tarik's face, masking his features from the torchlight for an instant. Rezaw smiled to himself. Something to fight for, and something to use. The following morning, Rahim was jarred awake by the sound of metal thumping into the wood just outside his open window. He rolled from his bed and lumbered to the sill. "What the hell are you doing?" he grumbled to Tarik. "What does it look like?" Tarik lifted the recurve bow and knocked an arrow to the sinew. "We need to leave." Rahim glanced up at the sky. The sun had yet to crest above the horizon. It was nothing but a jagged ribbon of light along the eastern rooftops of Ray. "Did you even sleep?" Rahim yawned. Tarik let the arrow fly. It thudded into the wood beside Rahim's head. Rahim did not flinch. Was that truly necessary? "Get your things, before my uncle returns and insists we eat with him." "Where did he go?" "I don't know. He left while it was still dark outside." Tarik fitted another arrow to the string and took aim. "Why are we vanishing like thieves in the night?" Tarik shot him a look to skewer a stone. "Because I don't want him to know what we're doing."
"Oh? What are we doing?"
"You and your infernal questions." Tarik loosed the arrow. It coiled in a tight spiral and thunked into the wood, perfectly grouped alongside seven other arrows with matching fletchings. "All hail Tarik, son of Nasir, Emir of Talakan. Congratulations. You can shoot an arrow," Rahim said in a flat tone. Tarik swore under his breath and started for the window. "I knew I never should have..." "Calm down," Rahim scratched at his scalp. "I'll get my things. But can you tell me the reason for such secrecy?" Tarik stopped near the open window and took a steadying breath. "You're starting to worry me," Rahim continued. "I know you're concerned about Shazi, but Reza Effendi said we should wait until..." "No, I won't wait. I can't wait." Rahim pinched the bridge of his nose. "What are you planning to do?"
"Something. Anything."
"We still don't have a plan."
"And Reza Effendi said to wait. We should wait."
Tarik leaned a shoulder into the tan stone wall.
"I've been thinking."
"I'm listening," Rahim sighed.
"Despite my wiser inclinations."
The Bedouin tribes along the border of Khorasan and Parthia. They've notoriously claimed no allegiance to either kingdom. What if we offered them a reason to change their position?
"What kind of reason?"
"The reason any man fights for a cause. Purpose."
"Sounds vaguely poetic," Rahim rejoined. "You're going to need more than that."
"Land. The rights to land. The organization they need to demand those rights." Rahim shifted his lips to one side in contemplation.
"Interesting. But they're nomadic by nature. Why would they have any interest in land?"
"Some of them may not, but they fought against each other over the centuries, and save an influx of gold, land is the quickest way to gain power and influence. Perhaps one of their leaders might take an interest in fighting alongside us. They may be notoriously ruthless, but they're also some of the best horsemen I've ever encountered. I see nothing but an advantage for both parties."
Rahim hedged. "It sounds dangerous."
"It's worth speaking to them. The worst that can happen is a refusal."
"Actually, the worst that can happen is that they slit your throat."
"Yes.
A series of vertical lines formed along the bridge of Tarek's nose. There is that. But it was not on my agenda to insult them in the process.
Well, if anyone can talk their way out of a beheading, it's you.
I thank you, Rahim. As always, your abiding confidence in me casts any possibility of doubt astray. Rahim countered with a lopsided grin.
Actually, if anyone can talk their way out of a beheading, it's Shazi. Thankfully, some of that charisma managed to rub off on you.
It was never charisma. It was unmatched nerve, Tarek said in amused remembrance.
Perhaps you're right. I could see her daring a cobra to strike, swearing her venom would kill first.
Tarek smiled. And she would win.
Of that there is no doubt. In fact, I am almost certain she terrorized the mighty Caliph of Khorasan until he was nothing but a mewling kitten, cowering in the corner. Who knows, we might be deposing her one day.
Tarek sombered immediately at the mention of their king.
No, he is not a man to rescind any kind of power with ease.
And how would you know this?
I just know it, Tarek snapped. He murdered my cousin, and now he has Sherzad. This is a man with nothing but evil in his blood. The only thing to consider when it comes to Khalid ibn al-Rashid is how many times I wish he could die at my hands, and how unfortunate it is that the answer is only once.
I despise him too. With the fire of 1,000 suns, I despise him. But it is always a good idea to know your enemy, Tarek.
Don't mistake my vehemence for foolishness. I intend to learn everything I can about him, but that will never happen locked in the walls of my family's fortress. With that in mind, I'm going into the desert to seek out the Bedouin.
Tarek's face was set with determination.
Alone.
Alone?
Yes, alone. I need you to go to Talakan in case my uncle sends word. I'll dispatch Zoraya every 2 days with my location.
You'd leave me with your parents?
You could always go home.
To my brothers and their screaming children? Rahim scoffed.
To the constant attempts to marry me off to a cousin's friend's ugly sister?
I think not. Besides, I owe you this much for all these years of friendship. And I owe Shazi even more.
Tarek laughed softly. I thank you, Rahim John, as I always should, yet seldom do.
You're welcome, you selfish bastard. In any case, I can look forward to one good thing coming from all this secret plotting.
And that would be a full night of sleep, without being shot at for it.
The first morning Sherzad awoke in the palace without fearing the dawn was a strange one. Her heart clenched reflexively at the light, and then relaxed when she heard the sound of Despina bustling about the room. She breathed deeply and settled back into the pillows, allowing her body to bask in this newfound ease.
Maybe he should just stay in Amarda, Sherzad mumbled to no one.
I was about to wake you up, Despina replied. Your food is getting cold.
Sherzad paused, then made a decision.
Honey catches more flies than vinegar.
Thank you for using your better judgment, and not resorting to your usual churlishness, Sherzad teased.
Churlishness? You're not exactly pleasant in the morning.
Sherzad grinned before rising to her feet. She pushed aside the thin silk surrounding the bed and strode to the table where her customary tray of food sat waiting. When she glanced over at Despina, she was surprised to see her handmaiden's face was not as glowing and perfect as usual. Her skin was wan, and her forehead appeared strained.
What's wrong? Sherzad asked.
Despina shook her head.
I'm fine, just a bit peaked.
Peaked? You look ill.
No, I'll be fine.
Do you need to rest?
I'm fine, Sherzad, truly.
Despina raised the lid from the tureen of soup and dropped a crystal of rock sugar into the bottom of a small etched glass cup. Then she lifted the ornate silver pot from its resting place above a low-burning candle. As she raised it high above the glass cup and began to pour, her hand trembled, and the stream of tea splashed back from inside the cup before hitting the teapot.
"I'm sorry," Despina mumbled.
"You're permitted to make mistakes on occasion," Shahrazad smiled impishly.
"All evidence to the contrary," she shot back under her breath.
"When did I ever make such outrageous demands?" The lines on Despina's brow deepened.
"Despina, what's wrong?"
"Nothing." "She's lying again." Shahrazad cut her eyes and tore a piece of lavash in half.
"I'm sorry." Despina finished pouring the tea. "What were you saying about Amarda?"
"I was just commenting on the Caliph's recent journey. Do you know why he went there?"
"He's most likely visiting the Sultan of Parthia, his uncle."
"I see. Does he visit him often?" Shahrazad began eating her soup. Despina shook her head.
"No. They are not exactly friendly. The Sultan is not his uncle by blood. He's the brother of the former Caliph's first wife, and he despised our Caliph's mother."
"Interesting.
Why?"
Despina shrugged. "I suppose it's for the logical reason any man would hate his dead sister's replacement. In addition, our Caliph's mother was beautiful, smart, and vivacious. By all accounts, the first wife was... not."
"Then why would the Caliph visit the Sultan?"
"I'm not sure. I suppose it's for diplomatic reasons. You should ask him when he returns."
"He won't tell me."
Despina gave her a half-grin.
"I'm glad you're talking to me again.
Staying silent isn't a good option for someone like me."
"A wise decision for someone like you."
"I just said that."
"I know."
Shahrazad snorted. She reached for her glass of tea. Just then, she noticed an unusual smattering of small dark spots on the side of the silver teapot. She grasped the handle and drew it closer, her eyebrows tufting together. With a linen napkin, she rubbed at one of the areas of discoloration. It did not clear away. Shahrazad pursed her lips. She lifted her cup of tea and poured a drop of its contents onto the pot. As soon as the liquid hit the shining surface, the silver changed color. Black. Like death.
"Despina,"
Shahrazad began in an even tone.
"Yes.
I think there's something wrong with my tea." Where your heart longs to be. Someone had tried to poison her, and it was not the tea, as Shahrazad had first suspected. It was the sugar. Jalal was furious. When he confronted all those with access to her food, each person staunchly proclaimed innocence. As was customary when serving any member of the royal family, the cook had tasted all the items on Shahrazad's tray before sending it to her room, and numerous individuals had attested to this fact, though no one had thought to taste the sugar. Unsurprisingly, Shahrazad did not eat anything else the rest of the day, and now a young servant girl accompanied every tray of food brought to Shahrazad's room, a girl whose sole purpose in life was to taste the queen's food and drink one last time before it entered her mouth. A young girl who must mean something to someone. It disgusted Shahrazad. As did the knowledge that her time feeling safe, those fleeting moments without the weight of her impending doom hovering about her like a dark specter, had been taken away from her before she'd had a true chance to enjoy it. But the worst part was that she knew now, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that she could not trust her handmaiden. After all, Despina was the last person who had handled her tray of food, the one who had prepared that fatal cup of tea. For some reason, this fact disheartened Shahrazad more than anything else. She had not trusted Despina before, but some part of her had wanted to, had hoped that one day she could be a real friend, despite everything. That hope was shattered, and it made Shahrazad angry. 3 nights of mostly uninterrupted sleep had not dulled the anger. This afternoon, Shahrzad had elected to wander one of the many terraced courtyards in search of a perfect rose. The banality of this task added a feeling of uselessness to her already irritated disposition. She wandered past another flowering hedge, her eyes squinted against the sun, and her forehead creased with frustration.
"If you'll tell me what you're looking for, I can help," Despina offered.
"No, you can't."
"My, but you're in a mood.
You really can't help me. There's an art to a perfect rose. The scent, the color, the arrangement of the petals. My father even argues that one too many petals can ruin the entire flower, can disturb the way it grows.
And I would argue the prettiest flowers are the ones that seem a little imperfect."
"See, you can't help me," Shahrzad groused. Just then, she felt Despina stiffen by her side.
"What's wrong?" Shahrzad asked.
Captain Al-Khoury is coming down the stairs."
Her flush spread from throat to hairline.
"So, why are you nervous?"
Despina hesitated.
"Ever since the incident with the tea, I've felt uncomfortable around him."
"I see." Shahrzad pursed her lips, fighting to contain the accusations. As Jalal stepped into view, Despina took special pains to scramble behind the Rajput, out of sight. Jalal curved a languid eyebrow in her direction, and then turned to Shahrzad.
"How are you this afternoon, Shahrzad?"
He bowed with an easy grin, his gold-trimmed cloak spilling over one shoulder and a hand resting casually on the hilt of his scimitar.
"Alive."
He threw back his head and laughed.
"I'm glad to see it. Are you in the midst of something important?"
"Of course, I have a possible coup in the works. Then I intend to draw up plans for a new form of trade involving elephants at sea and sails of spun silk. Would you care to join me?"
He smiled. "Only in the coup. The rest sounds a bit commonplace, if you ask me."
Shahrzad laughed.
"No, of course I'm not doing anything important. I'm firmly entrenched in the mundane. Please rescue me."
"Actually, I was wondering if you could do something queenly for me."
"Queenly? What do you mean?"
"We have an unexpected visitor. I was wondering if you could receive him in the caliph's absence."
"Who is it?"
"He's a scholar, so to speak. He was Khalid's first tutor, as well as the lifelong tutor of Khalid's mother. He has not seen Khalid since he was a little boy. I know he meant a great deal to his mother, and I would hate to send him along without receiving him formally." He winked. Shahrzad could not help but smile.
"Additionally, I assume the visit may satisfy some lingering curiosities."
Jalal grinned knowingly.
"Why, Captain Al-Khoury, you make it sound so intriguing."
He laughed.
"So, are you coming, Shahrzad?"
She nodded, her hazel eyes sparkling.
"I have to warn you, he's a bit odd," Jalal stated as he began retracing his steps, with Shahrzad and her tiny retinue in tow.
"How so?"
"He's a relic of days past, very devoted to the ancient arts. But I think you'll like him, and I know he'll be very pleased to meet you."
"What's his name?"
"Musa Zaragoza."
"That's a very unusual name," Shahrzad said.
"He's Moorish."
"Ah, I see. Well, I'll do my best."
"I know you will."
They continued up the numerous flights of stairs and into the cool marble hallways. Jalal led them to a large room with a domed ceiling, five times the height of a man. Its walls were tiled and covered with painstakingly carved reliefs, depicting battle scenes long forgotten of warriors brandishing their weapons and vanquishing their foes. In the corner stood a very tall man, draped in garments of vibrant fabric. His deep blue rida fell to the floor, and its hood was wound about his head, secured by a circlet of leather and gold. Thick Mankala cuffs were wrapped around both wrists, and his beautiful dark skin reminded Shahrzad
of the finest medjool date. When he turned to face her, he smiled so widely his teeth seemed to glow white, like pearls set against ebony. Jalal and Despina left her at the door, and the Rajput stood inside nearby, his sword at the ready. Shahrazad returned her guest's smile and walked toward him. "What do I say?" "Welcome," she began. "I am Shahrazad." He glided to her in a swirl of colors, his hands outstretched.
"And I am Musa. What a privilege to meet you."
It was an intense voice, like honey and smoke. Shahrazad took his hands. Standing so close to him, she realized he was actually a great deal older than he appeared. His eyebrows were peppered with white, and the fine lines etched about his face indicated a propensity for deep thought and a predilection for amusement. As he grasped her hands, Shahrazad saw something register in his rich brown eyes, but it came and went in a flash.
"Thank you so much, Musa Effendi. I am so sorry the Caliph is not here to greet you."
He shook his head.
"It is my fault for coming here unannounced. I was hoping to see him as I was passing through, but, alas, it appears I must save our reunion for another journey."
"Please sit." Shahrazad gestured toward the cushion surrounding the low table to her right, and they took their places across from each other. "Would you care for something to eat?"
"No, no, I cannot stay. Again, this was not meant to be anything but a short visit. I do not wish to impose on anyone."
"It is not an imposition in any way. I would not have such an esteemed guest leave the palace hungry." Shahrazad grinned. He laughed. The sound seemed to leap from wall to wall.
"And how do you know I am esteemed? Were you not told the truth?"
His mouth twitched with humor.
"And what is the truth, Musa Effendi?"
"That the last time I was in this palace, I was thrown out on my heels, with nothing but the clothes on my back."
Shahrazad controlled her expression. She took a deep breath and folded her hands in her lap.
"Well, it seems we owe you at least a meal then, sir."
His laughter burst from his mouth once more, even bolder than before.
"Thank the stars for you, my lovely child. What light you must bring to my poor Khalid."
"Light may not be the appropriate word." She offered him a small smile in response.
"As I feared, this is not a harmonious marriage," Musa said gently.
"Is there any hope for one?"
"In truth, it is too soon to tell. We have only been married a few days, and marriage to the Caliph is somewhat difficult."
"So I've heard."
His voice was knowing and sad.
"And do you wish for a harmonious marriage with him?"
Shahrazad shifted uncomfortably in her seat. For some reason, lying to this strangely garbed man with the rich laugh and the probing eyes seemed wrong.
"I long for a marriage based on love and mutual respect, Musa Effendi. Whether it is possible with the Caliph remains to be seen."
"Ah, so honest. Khalid values such honesty above all else. He craves it. Even as a small child, he sought the truth with a kind of fervor I've rarely encountered in any individual. Do you know this about him?"
"I know very little about his past."
He nodded. "Tell me, beyond the rumors, what kind of man has Layla's son become?" Shahrazad paused and studied the kind face of the stranger across from her. "If I answer his questions, will he answer mine?"
"A quiet one. A smart one."
"These things I could find out on the streets of Ray. I want to know the things you know. The things a clever young girl has deduced, even in such a short time."
Shahrazad chewed on her lower lip for a moment.
"A joyless one. A calculating one. A bitter one,"
she whispered. She thought of his raw fist and the punishing fury. An angry one.
It was not always thus, Musa sighed.
He was such a kind boy.
I've been told, but it is difficult to believe.
Understandably. He paused. Will you permit me to share a story with you, my lovely Sherzad, about the night I was thrown out on my heels?
Of course, Musa Effendi.
It is a sad story. I imagine any story that ends in such a manner would be.
Musa sat back in remembrance before he began. I was the tutor for Khalid's mother, Layla. And Layla was a joy, beautiful and talented, a lover of books and poetry. When she married Khalid's father and became his second wife, she was young, only 15 years old. I came along with her to Ray at her insistence. She was very headstrong. Unfortunately, it was not an easy marriage. Her husband was a good deal older than she, and he had clearly loved his first wife very much. Layla did not appreciate the constant comparisons. I tried hard to rein in her tantrums and bouts of despair, but the disparity between them in age and interests was oftentimes too difficult to breach. It was no one's fault, really. Khalid's father was quite set in his ways, and Layla was a spirited young woman. He stopped, his features growing sad.
After Khalid was born, I hoped everything would change. I had never seen a more devoted mother. Layla kissed his feet and sang to him as an infant. When he was older, she told him stories every night before he went to sleep, and Khalid loved her more than anything.
Musa closed his eyes for a moment, and Sherzad took a careful breath.
His mother told him stories at night. I was there the night Khalid's father learned of Layla's betrayal, when he discovered she had been carrying on an affair with a member of the palace guard. His tenor became low and grave. He dragged Layla through the halls of the palace by her hair. She was screaming at him, calling him horrible names. I tried to help her, but his soldiers prevented me from doing so. In the atrium, he called for Khalid. Layla kept telling Khalid everything would be fine, that she loved him, that he was her world. Sherzad's hands curled into fists. And there, in front of her 6-year-old son, Khalid's father slit Layla's throat. When Khalid started to cry, his father yelled at him. I will never forget what he said.
A woman is faithful or she is dead. There is no in-between.
After that, I was thrown out of the palace with nothing but the clothes on my back. I should have fought harder, for Layla's sake, for Khalid's sake. But I was weak, afraid. Later I heard what had become of Layla's son, and I always regretted it. From the bottom of my soul, I regretted it. Something had risen in Sherzad's chest, forming a barrier that prevented her from speaking. She swallowed hard, not knowing what else to do. She reached across the table and took Musa's hand. He wrapped her small hands in both of his, and they sat in this manner for a time. And then, with careful respect, Sherzad attempted to break the silence.
Musa Effendi, I feel certain you should not hold yourself responsible for anything that transpired, not that night or any of the nights after. I am young, and therefore I know my words only carry a certain weight with the world. But I do know enough to realize you cannot control the actions of others. You can only control what you do with yourself afterward.
His grip on her hand tightened. Such wise words. Does Khalid know what a treasure you are, my dearest star?
Sherzad's eyes furnished him with the smile her lips could not.
Musa shook his head.
He has suffered a great deal. It troubles me immensely to know he inflicts suffering on others as a result. And it vexes me because these are not the actions of the boy I knew. But as you are young, I am old, and in my age, wisdom becomes less of a birthright and more of an expectation. In my life, the one thing I have learned, above all, is that no individual can reach the height of their potential without the love of others. We are not meant to be alone, Sherzad. The more a person pushes others away, the clearer it becomes he is in need of love the most.
I could never love such a man, such a monster.
Sherzad started to withdraw her hand from his, but he held on to it.
Tell me, he pressed. How long have you possessed the gift?
Taken aback, Sherzad merely stared at him, her hazel eyes blank. Musa returned her gaze, his warm eyes searching.
Then you are unaware. It lies dormant in your blood, he said to himself.
What are you talking about? She demanded.
Perhaps a parent, he continued. Does your mother or father possess any unique abilities?
Realization dawned on Sherzad.
My father, he can do certain things, very small things. But he's never been adept at controlling it.
Musa nodded.
If ever you wish to learn about these abilities, send word to me. I would be happy to share my knowledge with you. I am not extremely proficient, but I've learned to control it.
He grinned slowly. As he spoke, Sherzad saw the flame dancing in the nearby lamp flicker out and spark back to life, unbidden.
And I could learn to do this? She whispered. In truth, I do not know. It is impossible to gauge an individual's abilities. I only know what I knew the moment I first held your hands in my grasp. That you and I share a common bond. And now that bond extends beyond this mere twist of fate. I beseech you, my star. Please see past the darkness. There is potential for boundless good in the boy I knew. Trust that the man you see now is a shadow of what lies beneath. If you would, give him the love that will enable him to see it for himself. To a lost soul, such a treasure is worth its weight in gold, worth its weight in dreams. As he spoke, Musa leaned over their still-clasped hands, a bright smile of affection lighting his features.
Thank you, Musa Effendi, for the wisdom, the story, and so much more.
Thank you, my star.
He released her hand and stood from the table.
Will you not stay for a meal? Sherzad asked again.
He shook his head. I must be on my way, but I promise to visit again very soon. I shall not let so many years pass by this time, and I will cling to the hope that, when I see you next, it will be with Khalid at your side.
At your side, and the better for it.
A strange twinge of guilt knifed through Sherzad's stomach. Musa made his way to the satchel of belongings he had left in the corner. He lifted the pack from the floor and paused, as if in consideration. Then he reached inside and withdrew a threadbare moth-eaten rug, rolled tightly in a bundle and bound by a hemp cord.
A gift for you, dearest Sherzad.
Thank you, Musa Effendi.
What an odd gift.
Keep it with you always. It is a very special carpet. When you are lost, it will help you find your way, he said, with a knowing glint in his eyes. Sherzad took the parcel and held it against her chest. Musa reached over and placed his warm palm on her cheek.
Let it take you where your heart longs to be, The Old Man and the Well. The desert sun bore down on Tarik with the heat of a brazen fire. It rippled off the dunes, distorting his vision and searing the sky. He wrapped the hood of his rida tight across his face, securing the leather band low on his brow. Whorls of sand curled around the legs of his stallion, trailing a glittering haze with the rise and fall of each massive hoof. Zoraya circled above, her cries growing louder with each passing hour. As the sun started to set, they approached the border of Khorasan and Parthia, and Tarik began searching for a place to rest. He knew the Bedouin tribes were nearby, but he did not want to run the risk of encroaching on their territory without a full night's rest, as he had not slept well since leaving Rey almost 4 days ago. In the morning he would devise a way to speak with a local so as to determine the current state of affairs in the region. In the distance, he spotted a small settlement of sun-weathered buildings situated around a decrepit stone well. The horseshoe of cracked mud houses was capped by caving roofs and appeared all but abandoned. An elderly man stood at the well's edge, removing animal skins from across the backs of two aging camels. Tarik spurred his dark bay Arabian forward, tugging once more on the hood of his white rida. When he neared the well, the elderly man glanced over his shoulder. Then he grinned up at Tarik. He was dressed in simple clothes of spun brown linen, and his thick beard was stippled with silver. A prominent gap separated his two front teeth, and his hooked nose was broken across the bridge. His hands were gnarled from age and use. "A fine horse," he nodded, still grinning. Tarik nodded in return. The elderly man reached a shaking hand for the bucket above the well, and promptly knocked it down. The bucket struck the murky caverns of the hollow, ricocheting with each hit until it splashed into the water with a taunting sound. Tarik exhaled loudly. The elderly man groaned, ripping his rida from his head and stomping his feet in the dirt. He began wringing his hands, the dismay on his face as plain as the day. Tarik observed this melodramatic performance until he could stomach it no longer, and then dismounted from his stallion with a moribund sigh. "Do you have some rope?" he asked the elderly man as he removed the hood from his face.
"Yes, sahib,"
the man bowed over and over. "That is not necessary. I am not your sahib."
"The sahib has a fine horse, a fine sword. He is most definitely a sahib."
Tarik sighed again. "Give me the rope and I will climb down for the bucket."
"Oh, thank you, sahib. You are most generous."
"Not generous, just thirsty." Tarik smiled wryly. He took the rope from the man and secured it to the post over the well. Then he paused in consideration. "Don't try to steal my horse. He's a temperamental beast, and you won't get far." The elderly man shook his head with such fervor that Tarik thought it might cause him injury.
"I would not do such a thing, sahib."
His intensity put to question his intent. Tarik studied the man before extending his left arm and whistling to the skies. Zoraya came hurtling from the clouds in a mass of feathers and wicked talons. The elderly man lifted a trembling forearm to his face, warding away the raptor's piercing menace. "She likes to start with the eyes," Tarik said in a flat tone, as Zoraya spread her wings above his leather munkala and glared at the man.
"I will not do anything disgraceful, sahib."
"Good. Do you live around here?"
"I am Omar, of the Bedouin."
Tarik considered the man once more. "Omar of the Bedouin, I'd like to make a deal with you."
"A deal, sahib?"
"Yes. I'll retrieve the bucket from the well and assist you in filling the skins with water. In return,
I'd like some information on your tribe and its sheikh.
Omar scratched